angel investors are people who understand what that feeling is to be the only one working on the business and trying to figure out how to turn it from nothing into something.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Meet Pat LaPointe. As an angel funder, he provides not just capital, but mentoring and networking opportunities to tech-based startups in Montana and nearby states. He also serves on the board of several companies he's helped develop. Pat is the managing director of Montana-based Frontier Angels and the author of Marketing by the Dashboard Light. Recently, he helped launch Early Stage Montana, a coalition of Montana organizations that trains and mentors entrepreneurs. Statewide Showcase, their 2018 business competition, gave seven Montana companies a chance to pitch their businesses. Within a few months of completing the program, these companies had raised over $3 million to fund their development. Today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Pat LaPointe and I drill into the details of accelerating the growth of early-stage tech companies in Montana and why it matters. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Pat is joining us from Peak Studios in his current hometown of Bozeman, Montana. So, Pat, for our listeners, what is angel funding?
Well, angel investing is really focused on companies at the very early stages of their formation. So it could be two people in a garage who have a great idea and need a little bit of money to explore the idea further or to build some software or go gather some information in the marketplace. Or it actually could be a business that's already up and running and, you know, maybe doing as much as $1 to $2 million a year in revenue, but is now looking for some growth capital in order to be able to expand or grow more quickly. So we play at the very early stages of helping companies get going.
And what type of person is an early stage investor?
Oh, it's a very broad spectrum. You know, I'd say, Arnie, that one thing that many of them have in common, and by the way, there are over 300,000 angel investors in the United States alone. So it's quite a large community. One thing that most of them have in common is that they themselves have been in an entrepreneurial role at some point in some way. Now, that's not to suggest that there aren't people who were captains of industry who are now angel investors, because there are many. But for the most part, angel investors are people who understand what that feeling is to be the only one working on the business and trying to figure out how to turn it from nothing into something. And most of them have had some significant success in building businesses, selling those businesses. And in addition to looking for good investment opportunities, they're looking for ways to help entrepreneurs be successful and pay it forward, as it were.
So they like that magic that happens when a sole operator of a new startup makes it happen.
They do. They like the magic, and they have great empathy for that entrepreneur. They want to share their life lessons. They want to make themselves available, make their contacts available, and do whatever they can to help people get off the ground and share in the success that they themselves have experienced.
Is there a difference between an angel investor and an early stage investor, or are those terms synonymous?
There's a little bit of sloppiness in the lexicon. A lot of people refer to the entire category as venture investing. And think of it this way. Early stage investing generally covers companies up to a point where they're valued at around $15 million. If they're valued at more than $15 million, it starts to move into what's called a later stage investing. But up to about $15 million in value, they're usually considered early stage. Now, even within that early stage definition, you have angels who have a tendency to play more at the earliest elements of that spectrum, but they also move up all the way to that $15 million valuation range. You also have venture capitalists who tend to start at the higher end of early stage and then migrate even further up the chain into later stage. But there are a lot of venture capitalists who also will do companies that have valuations below $5 million. So it's a little bit sloppy in the lexicon, but generally speaking, when angels and venture capitalists meet, they know who they are.
That's good. What are they looking for? What excites them?
Well, you know, there are a few things that we look for as angel investors. First, we look for a business idea that is based on the recognition of some significant material problem or unsolved opportunity. So first, there has to be a very clear problem-solution statement. And we have to understand the entrepreneur's vision for how they propose to solve the problem. The second thing is we have to convince ourselves that there's money to be made in solving the problem, that when the proposed solution actually gets in the hands of the customer, that they're going to like it, they're going to be willing to pay a reasonable price for it, and that the company itself is going to be able to find more and more and more of those customers. In other words, the business can scale and get larger. The third thing we look for is some sort of a barrier to entry. Now, whether that comes in the form of a patent or whether it's just some tightly held trade secrets that the company nurtures and protects, or in some cases, even if it's just being first to market, we look for situations where once you start to have success as an entrepreneur, it's unlikely that someone's going to be able to immediately crawl up behind you, start chipping away at the very market that you've developed and in the process, steal your prospective customers, and maybe even drive the prices down through competition. So we look for some sort of a barrier to entry. And then we also look for that human quality. We look for people who seem to have the ability to take a punch and get up off the mat and get back at the task, refocus themselves, and creatively imagine new ways to attack the problem. Because if there's one thing I can tell you, having been an entrepreneur multiple times myself, you take a lot of punches and you find yourself lying on your back looking at the ceiling a lot. And you have to be able to get up, shake it off, learn from it, and figure out what your next steps are, and do that in a very timely manner so that you're not burning through the money in your checking account, wasting time trying to figure things out, and wind up running out of money before you find an answer. Those are some of the things that we really look for in terms of identifying attractive investments.
I recently read an article that said entrepreneurs are under more stress than many, many other occupations just because of that up and down from the mat kind of experience they have.
I wouldn't doubt that. I can absolutely attest to having had many sleep-deprived nights myself at various points in building my businesses. And I think it's a level of stress that some people are much better suited to handle than others. And that's not a judgment statement. It's more an observation, you know, just like people have different levels of interests and different activities that turn them on. Some people are really well suited to managing the stress, and they see it as a game of some sort, and they commit themselves to winning. And we look for characteristics like that in the entrepreneurs.
There is a fundamental difference between just being a business owner and an entrepreneur. How would you explain the difference?
Aspiration. Let's distinguish here between two types of aspirations. If you start a business with the goal of developing the world's greatest insurance agency, because You enjoy helping your customers. You want to be a productive member of the community. And you want to be able to build a business that delivers a good living for yourself. That's wonderful. I came from a household where that was exactly the case with both of my parents and my brother. They're all entrepreneurs, and they've all built their local businesses that serve the community and provide them with an income. They don't aspire to see those businesses turn into big national competitors or even global competitors. Some entrepreneurs get into business with the idea that they're going to change the world and that they're going to solve some big problem that may exist, whether that problem is global water pollution through stormwater runoff or whether that problem is something more in the medical space, or even if it's some piece of very technical business-to-business software that might exist behind every virtual server in the world out there. Some people really want to go out and change the world. And when they set out with those aspirations, they want their companies to be big. Now, from an angel investing perspective, we're predominantly focused on the companies that have those very large aspirations. Those are the ones where there's a much greater likelihood that our investment is going to turn into a big exit opportunity. And when you hear investors use the word exit, what they mean is an opportunity for our money to actually come back home to us, meaning that the company gets bought perhaps by another company, or it might even go IPO and list their shares on one of the stock markets. Those are different ways that investors can recoup their money, but usually only when we're betting on companies that have those big aspirations.
Right. And the investors are looking for a big multiple as the return to them, considering the high risk that they're taking.
Not just the risk. You're quite right about that. And I don't know if your listeners maybe have ever seen the numbers, but generally speaking, only about one out of every 10 companies that we invest in will wind up providing any sort of a return to us. Of those 10, hypothetically speaking, 6.5 or 7 are very likely to go out of business within a 5-year period of time. Those are just the odds. And all of our investment dollars are completely lost, gone forever. One or two of them are likely to survive and be able to maybe pay back some of the investment that we make, but not necessarily a very attractive return. One of them, hopefully, is going to be the big winner that's going to pay us a multiple in order to make up for all of those losses. But the other factor to take into account is the time value of the money that we invest. Because it often takes 5, 10, even 15 years before some of these companies realize their potential and wind up getting bought and our money comes home. And when you think about factoring the opportunity cost of what else might we have done with that money in the meantime into the return equation, we need to see a pretty big return in order for this asset class, this investing sector, to really be attractive.
Given that scenario, it's hard to imagine that there are 300,000 people in the United States willing to engage in it.
You know, the 300,000 number, and by the way, here's another interesting statistic for you. Angel investors in the United States invest more money every year than venture capitalists. How's that?
That's surprising.
Now, it is, isn't it? And most people don't know that. Now, the 300,000 is a very broad definition of angel investor, and it probably includes mostly people who are occasionally investing $5,000 or $10,000 in their niece's new company. In terms of the number of professional angel investors, those that do this on a regular basis, study it, purposefully put themselves in situations where they're seeing a lot of opportunities and screen those opportunities carefully, I would imagine that there's probably 10 to 20,000 of those people around the United States. We do have a national association called the Angel Capital Association, and The Angel Capital Association tries to conduct research amongst people who do this on a part or full-time basis and gives us some data and allows us to share some information about our experiences and improve and provide better practices and learn from one another. So the community ranges from the very casual once-in-a-while angel investor to people like me who pretty much do it every single day.
So what is the current state of investment capital in Montana?
The current state is, I think, characterized by a fairly good balance. And that's going to be a controversial statement. There are a lot of people who believe that Montana is a little bit of a capital desert from a growth capital perspective. I think that was true even as recent as 3 years ago. But in the course of the past couple of years, between Next Frontier Capital's launch of their venture funds here, between some of the notable successes that Montana companies have had that have helped them attract outside venture capital, meaning venture capital firms based outside of Montana now coming here to make their investments, and between the continued growth and organization and professionalism of the angel capital community, what I can tell you is that we have more money at our disposal ready for investment than we can possibly invest in Montana today. Now, the other thing that's going to be controversial about that for many people is a sense that there are so many businesses that are working so hard to get themselves off the ground or growing more quickly. And how could I possibly say that when, from the entrepreneur's perspective, the experience is most often hearing the word no from investors? Well, the answer is, as we discussed previously, there are some key criteria that we have to apply in order to make sure that we're making smart investments. And so the number of really attractive investment opportunities in Montana is growing, but still has a way to go even to catch up to the amount of money that's available.
So what makes a startup tech company stand out to you?
Big idea, big opportunity, the human capital characteristics that I mentioned before, and a unique ability from a timing perspective to seize the moment. Those are, again, some of the things that immediately make us stand up and pay attention. And we see a lot of businesses. Arnie, I probably am contacted 10 times a week from companies in Montana who are looking for investment to help grow their business. And almost without fail, these are really wonderful people who have a great idea and have committed themselves to trying to get it off the ground. But for one reason or another, maybe the idea isn't solving a problem in a very permanent way. Or maybe the problem that they're solving is for a very small potential market and not a really big scalable opportunity. Or maybe they think they're solving it, but they haven't really been able to demonstrate that they can solve it yet. Or any number of factors. When we get those calls, what we try to do is to help give them some perspective on what we see as the difference between where they are and where they would need to be in order to qualify for investment. And then we try to introduce them to people and organizations around the state and around the country, for that matter, who might be able to help them acquire the skills, the perspective, the tools that they need to move a few more places down the game board before they're really good candidates for investment.
That leads me to ask you about Frontier Angels. Can you tell me a little bit about its genesis?
Frontier Angels was born in Montana back in 2006, I believe, when Liz Markey, a woman up in Polson, really led the charge to begin to try to organize angel investing into a more cohesive and professional operation here in Montana. And it started as what's called a fund, which means that about 30 people or so each got together and put some money into this fund. And then they would go out and look for companies to invest in. And they would get together and have these companies come in and present their opportunity. And then the people in the room would take a vote as to whether or not the fund would make an investment. And so the first Frontier Fund lasted from 2006 to approximately 2013. And it was followed by a second Frontier Fund from 2014 through 2017 that largely did the same thing. In 2017, I was asked if I would be interested in taking on the group, and I did with one big goal in mind that we can get to shortly. And part of that involved replatforming it to become more of a membership organization where qualified angel investors pay an annual fee to belong to the group. And in return, we bring them lots of high-quality early-stage investment opportunities from not only Montana but from around the Western United States. And they get to make their decisions about which companies they would like to invest in. And when enough people have interest, we put together a company, as it were, an LLC, and make the investment collectively on their behalf and then manage that investment for them through the life of that company. So that's a little bit of the history of Frontier Angels. And the last, I can tell you that in the last 18 months since we replatformed, we've made approximately 23 investments and invested well over $4 million in that time frame. So we are pretty prolific in terms of the number of deals that we do and the amount of money that we invest.
And what's the one big thing you wanted to get to?
When Liz asked if I'd be interested in taking on the angels, I was a little reluctant, actually, at first, and reluctant simply because I have built three different companies myself and been through the washing machine, the dryer, and every other appliance that tortured me along the way, and have been really enjoying being semi-retired here in Montana and just loving the lifestyle. And I was a little concerned about making the commitment to helping to take this to the next level until I realized that growing the angel group and continuing what Liz started to make it more professional and to scale it and make it much more statewide in terms of its membership coverage would really be a very critical part of helping to accelerate the growth of the tech ecosystem here in Montana. And that in and of itself is going to be an important component of how we continue to evolve the economy in Montana and how we continue to reshape the gross domestic product, our GDP, as we'll be able to rely less and less on royalties from extraction and as we want to limit the degree to which we become totally dependent upon tourism. And so a healthy economy has to have multiple healthy growing components to it. And the angel group is really a very critical part of making sure that the early stage technology sector is one of those new platforms here in Montana.
It seems to me, from my experience, that the acceleration process is going along fairly well.
You know, I think that's absolutely true. And I think in the last couple of years, we have seen a lot of emphasis in this area, a lot of new resources, a lot more engagement. The Montana High Tech Business Alliance has done an excellent job of organizing people from across the spectrum in the technology sector here, bringing them together, creating more of a community, publishing studies about the sector, helping inform our legislature and the community at large about what was going on in the tech sector. And I think we've made tremendous progress. And I think we still have miles to go if we're going to become a material element of the GDP of the state, as I mentioned a moment ago.
You also helped launch Early Stage Montana. Tell us about that.
Well, this fits exactly with that mission. Early Stage Montana is a not-for-profit organization that was formed through the collaboration of many different groups across the state of Montana, including Big Sky Economic Development out of Billings, Prospera out of Bozeman and Gallatin County, Montana State University and the Blackstone Launchpad, University of Montana and the Blackstone Launchpad out there, a Missoula Economic Partnership, the Governor's Office of Economic Development, as well as Next Frontier Capital, and several other groups have all come together to realize that if we develop a smarter programmatic system of connecting early companies with training, mentorship, access to contacts, and visibility to investors, that we have the potential to significantly accelerate the pace with which those companies begin to achieve their goals and get traction in the marketplace. And if we can accelerate that pace, we can create jobs in our communities much more quickly than they otherwise would be created. That's the mission of Early Stage Montana.
And how's it been going so far?
Well, we've got 1 year under our belt. We started the program in 2018. We had three regional competitions where we called for companies to enter and had regional presentation competitions in Billings, in Bozeman, and out in Missoula, and attracted people from eastern Montana and western Montana and central Montana to one of those three locations. We had panels of experienced entrepreneurs and people in the entrepreneurial sector. We evaluated over 40 businesses in the course of those regional competitions, and we identified seven businesses that were named as the winners, and we were able to take those seven businesses and offer them a free week-long intensive coaching and mentoring session called Hyper Accelerator, where we literally locked them in Jabs Hall in a room at Montana State University's Business College and brought in 50 mentors, all of whom are professional investors and successful entrepreneurs in their own right. And in the course of a week, we put them through a very rigorous curriculum designed to look at all sides of their business and to give them the feedback and the exposure to that group of successful mentors in order to help them tighten their thinking about what they were trying to accomplish and how they were going to go do it. And then after that, we brought them to a statewide showcase, which took place last year in October at the Museum of the Rockies in the auditorium. We had over 300 people from the tech community across Montana attend that event. Each company had a chance to stand up and show off what it was doing and where it was going and how it was going to get there. And we also brought in venture capitalists from around the Western United States as well as tech transfer officers from not just Montana State University, but also from University of Washington and Colorado Boulder, UC Boulder, and University of Minnesota and others. And we had a great day-long celebration of the evolution of the tech community in Montana. And I think, as you may have mentioned in your introduction to the session, we measure results in very concrete terms. All of what I just explained to you is nice, and from a human level, it was terrific to be a part of and to make new friends and new connections. But what really matters is that across those seven companies, they now, since that day-long showcase we did, have raised collectively now over $5 million in outside venture capital, and most importantly, have created over 15 new jobs in the tech sector. So that's what we did in 2018. Now we're kicking off the 2019 program, and we have just about finished the process of calling for submissions. Our judges are evaluating the submissions that we've received this year, and we're preparing to do those same three regional competitions in Billings and Bozeman and in Missoula. Once again, we'll try to identify 7 to 15 companies that seem to be really ready to move to the next stage. And then we'll invite them to participate in one of what this year will be 2 of those week-long hyper-accelerators, one that will be held in Bozeman, Montana in early June, and one that will be held in Billings in early September. And then coming out of those 2 hyper-accelerators this year, we will have another statewide showcase, which this year will take place on November 7th in Missoula. And we will once again give these companies the opportunity to stand up, hopefully in front of 400 or 500 members of the technology community from across the state, and strut their stuff and show themselves off to investors and prospective board members and prospective employees and partners, and help them accelerate down the path to being successful and creating more jobs in our community. That's what we have planned for Early Stage Montana.
Pat, as you are looking at investment opportunities, what is the balance between men and women seeking funds?
The balance is changing dramatically these days to be much more balanced. I believe I'm seeing across 100 or more deals I look at every month, I'm seeing probably around 40% of them being women-owned or co-owned companies, which is terrific. There's also a great emphasis on trying to ensure that women have equal access to capital so that we can get more women starting more companies. And if we're going to successfully impact the tech portion of the GDP in Montana, that's going to be an important aspect of it. From the Frontier Angels perspective, we're super proud of the fact that we've been able to invest over a third of our total dollars in women-owned or co-owned companies so far. And we aspire to get it up to the 50% level and keep working on it every day. But we've really made it an area of focus and have had some great success with that.
As recently as 4 or 5 years ago, the number was about 10% women or less receiving investment capital. What's changed?
Well, of course, the numbers are all over the map. There really isn't a clear way to put a specific number on it. What's changed is that there is now a broad-based recognition that women make excellent entrepreneurs. Men make excellent entrepreneurs. Everybody can be an excellent entrepreneur. And if our biases are preventing us from finding and investing in those excellent entrepreneurs, regardless of who they may be, then we're limiting the potential returns from our portfolios. And so I think most investors have made a significant redoubling of their efforts to reach further out into the pool of potential entrepreneurial investments. And I think women are beginning to benefit from that. We still have a long way to go, but it's starting to take root in a systematic way instead of an ad hoc way.
I'm speaking with entrepreneur Pat LaPointe, Managing Director of Frontier Angels. When you serve on the board of directors of a developing company, what skills do you bring to the board?
Humility, first and foremost. Having taken a lot of knocks myself as an entrepreneur, I think a lot of times entrepreneurs, particularly younger entrepreneurs, have a bulletproofness about them, if that's a word. And that's great. And it's really important because it's part of that get up off the floor resiliency. But along the way, you have to have some people around you who have taken the punches before and know to expect them, and also who have a great appreciation for Murphy's Law. And so humility is an important aspect of what you can bring to a board of directors. But beyond that, I think I bring some experience, having been down the path, in terms of seeing the strategic, operational, financial, and long-term playbook of how a business can go from where it is to where it wants to be, and how to engage investors and partners and everyone else that it is necessary in order to create business success along the way. And so my job as a board member is really to listen to the entrepreneur's instinct, which is very often much better than mine, and help them nurture and refine their thinking, their planning, and help them respond effectively to the many, many little and occasionally some big crises that pop up along the way. That's my job.
If there aren't any confidentialities, can you share with us a success story?
I have personally invested in over 40 companies myself. And true to the numbers that I've shared with you previously, so far I have had many more failures than successes. And the learning that comes from the failures is often, by the way, far more valuable than what you learn in the successes. However, I've had successes where companies have done an excellent job of creating software tools that helped businesses better understand what their customers need and seen their sales go from zero to $6 or $7 million a year in revenue, and then found themselves being acquired by much bigger companies who valued the tools that they had built and saw how they could take those tools, put them in the hands of a much larger sales force, and achieve the bigger change the world kind of vision that the entrepreneur had originally seen, and by the way, been willing to pay for the value of that shortcut. And I've had that experience on several occasions, and it is tremendously rewarding on so many dimensions. I'd be lying if I said the money wasn't really attractive, but honestly, what makes it even more attractive is just the experience of going through the ups and downs with the people and then finding yourselves coming out the winning end of that. It's tremendously gratifying.
Pat, I don't want you to lie, so we'll move forward from there. But you alluded on several occasions, and it's well known that in 10 investments, you got 6 or 7 failures. Is there a common thread or a couple of threads that the failures bring to light?
Yeah, the common thread is they run out of money. So, and I realize that sounds flip, but that is the common thread. So running out of money is what ultimately is the last thing you notice about businesses that fail. Now, the question is, why do they run out of money? In most cases, they run out of money because they fail to achieve what's called product market fit, meaning that they have not been able to establish that they have a solution that the people with the problem are willing to pay for. They may have a solution. It may be an elegant solution. It may be one that it took them years to carefully research and fine-tune, but people weren't willing to pay for it, or they weren't willing to pay a high enough price for the solution. And so, time and again, as I work with a lot of these early stage companies, I try to help keep them very focused on the fact that it really doesn't matter how much you love the software that you're building, the app that you're building, or how much you love the new molecules that you've been discovering in your lab, or how much you love the sustainable new type of bed sheets that you've been able to engineer out of a more environmentally friendly supply chain. What ultimately matters is whether someone's willing to buy it. And the only way you're going to know that is to get out there on the street and talk to prospective customers and try to sell it and go through the failure iteration cycle until you succeed. And the faster you can work yourself through those failure iteration cycles, the greater the likelihood that you will be able to find your traction and raise more money to continue to grow and not run out of money along the way.
That process, to me, is more indicative of a business that already maybe has started up and has received funding. What tips do you have for our entrepreneurs that are listening to the show for startups, for people who haven't secured any money, who are just getting off the ground?
Tip number one would be, if you think back to our conversation earlier about aspirations, tip number one is know thyself. It's really important to know yourself well enough that you know whether you really are going after world domination in your business, or whether your aspiration is more to try to build something that's going to be manageable in size and produce a nice income for you and your family. Danger happens right away when people who actually have more modest goals try to paint a very aspirational picture with what they're doing and try to raise money on that basis. That inevitably leads to misalignment between your goals and the goals of your investors. So know thyself. Second, figure out how to very clearly and succinctly articulate the problem that exists in the world that you're solving for and how you intend to solve for it. You don't necessarily need to know yet exactly how much people are going to pay and exactly how much money you might be able to make from that. There's lots of us out there who can help you work through those things. But if you can't clearly articulate the problem and the solution, and along the way, articulate how you believe this solution is unique and in some respect going to be defensible, it's very difficult for us as investors to articulate that for you, and almost impossible for us to see into your brain and really grasp the nature of the opportunity. Part of that is because we all come with our already well-formed brain synapses and filters of preconceived notions. That's just the human aspect of it. Part of it is that when you're presenting yourself to a person like me, who is looking at 10 or 15 of these new potential opportunities a week, you have to realize that I can't give you more than about 2 minutes of brain space before I have to make a judgment call as to whether there may be something here worth spending more time on. Otherwise, I just couldn't possibly get through all the calls and emails I get on a regular basis. So being able to really articulate problem and solution is another critical aspect of it. The third piece is then be prepared to talk about team. We love the person who has the inspiration, who has the drive, the focus, the energy. We love that sort of spark entrepreneur who gets the concept moving, the visionary. But we can't invest in one person. We look for teams that are starting to form. You don't have to have six people already on the full-time roles of the company. But you have to be able to talk to us about what other skills you're going to surround yourself with and who these people might be in your current network of known individuals to help us know that there's something here that's going to be bigger than just you. So those are a couple of things you can really focus on while you're in the very early stages of trying to get that first investment money.
Pat, this has been very instructive and informative. The last question for you is, what does the future look like for semi-retired Pat LaPointe?
I love what I'm doing. I love it on multiple dimensions, Arnie. I love the innovation that I'm exposed to every week of how entrepreneurs are changing the world in so many ways. It's just unimaginable, the spectrum of innovation that's happening. And it really inspires my faith in humanity. I also love the angels themselves. I love the community. It is generally filled with people who are very giving of their time and their experience, and people who want to collaborate and want to help. And I'm thrilled to be able to start making even the smallest impact on accelerating the growth of the tech ecosystem here in Montana. And I hope to be able to spend more of my time over the coming years seeing early stage Montana achieve its full potential and become a true economic force for us here.
Pat, thank you for joining me today and sharing your insights, and we look forward to the business showcase this fall.
Thank you, Arnie. It's been my pleasure.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.